This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's move over to another case that you guys have a lot of questions about, a lot of thoughts on. Rex Heuermann pled guilty to 8 murders just the other week, sat across from Asa Alrup and told her he killed 7 of the 8 women in their basement. And there was an 8th, too. Surprise! And in the very house that Asa still lives in. It, rather than moving away, rather than going, I can't set foot in this house again, knowing my husband did these things over the course of our life over the last 30 years. No, she thought this is a great way. This is an HGTV moment. Gut the basement. Pick up some Hello Kitty bedspreads over at the TJ Maxx and stuffed animals and set them up. Set them up. Make it a nice, cozy little spot and sleep there. Then bring the documentary camera crew down to the basement to show just how cozy you made it. It's like trading spaces in hell. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue our conversation on all of this. So here's one of these statements from our social media. Asa gutted the room where Rex said he dismembered 7 women, decorated with stuffed animals, moved in. She says it's spiritual. That's kind of how she positioned it in the doc. And I should say here, too, quickly, we're not accusing Asa of doing anything illegal or being involved in the crime or anything like that. We're just saying this is creepy and weird. Listener says, I'm sorry. In what world is that a normal response to finding out your husband is the killer? Making a spiritual spot with Hello Kitty bedspreads in the kill room. Robin, your thoughts?
Well, yeah, it's not normal. No. And I'm going to do my best to channel our inner Siobhan Scott, who explains, I think, Rex and Asa exceptionally well and completely agree with all of it. No, normal people don't do that. And normal is also a word that requires definition. I'll just say healthy people don't do that. She has this complete inability to see Rex as anything other than her knight in shining armor, her savior, her Jesus figure. I don't care what you want to call it. She will not let go of that. And she made that downstairs a shrine to what she wants him to be, what she envisioned him as. And so that's what it's literally. She remade what his life was into what she always wanted it to be and has now wrapped herself around it. That's exactly what's going on. She has him captured in prison now, so he can't go around and killing prostitutes. She kept his boyhood home and boyhood room and made it into a boyhood room that she now sleeps in with the man that she adored her entire life. She's completely wrapped herself around in the fantasy she told herself but couldn't prove all these other years. She's now made it a reality.
When you say making it a shrine to him, because it's not like there's pictures of Rex up on the wall or anything like that, but that doesn't necessarily mean there has to be to be
shrine. To how he made her feel.
A shrine, it's an emotional shrine.
Yeah.
And he made her feel essentially like a child, I think. I mean, because these are childhood things. I mean, these are children's toys. These are plushies and things that, you know, I win at Dave and Buster's for my daughter. You know, I mean, it's rather bizarre that a grown-ass woman in her 50s or 60s is collecting that sort of, I mean, I guess it's not crazy, but is collecting that sort of thing in this sort of way. Does the fact that all of these things are so childish, does it say something that she didn't go to the local florist and fill it with bouquets and things that a 50, 60-some-year-old woman would fill their home with, not children's plushies, but she filled it with plushies? Does that say something about her cognitive level of thinking, that she went to childhood stuffed animals rather than, I guess, more of an appropriate comfort type things of someone her age in life?
Our greatest motivation as a human being is fear, and we want to feel safe. And so how that leaks out and we can observe it shows what that person needs to feel safe and no longer feel fear. I mean, so just think about, we all do this. It's just how we the actions we take for ourselves to do that is where it varies based on our context, our experiences, our genetics, our nature versus nurture, the blend of them together. And so what she's doing to feel safe, again, her entire world of what she made herself believe, and she did make herself believe because she was, I don't think it was intentional. It's just how her brain worked with him. He saved her from the life that she was having. And so that he made her feel safe. And so in order for her to double down on a life that just got upended, her knight in shining armor is now behind bars. She dug deeper in the house because it's in the basement where it's even more insular from the world. She remodeled it to feel like a child again, whether she had those things growing up, her daughter had those things grow up. There's some sort of attachment to the visual stimulus she put down there that allows her to feel safer than she otherwise would have. You know, human beings abhor change varying degrees depending on who we are, because change is fearful, because change means things are unknown. As a species, we don't like the unknown because it doesn't allow us to feel safe. It keeps coming back to that same thing. All these things she's doing is letting her feel safe and empowered. And it's that childish, because that's when we go through traumatic events, our mental developmental stops at that age. And so for whatever reason, that's at the age that she stopped mentally developing in these areas of, and so she just ratcheted right back down to that. And it's manifesting just like this in a world of creepy, but to her, it's just, it just makes total sense to her. This is just what I need to do to feel good. And now she's wrapping it, and you can see her wrapping words she thinks the world wants to hear because she's performative for the cameras. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm doing it to honor the victims, to spirit. I mean, she's throwing words out there, but you see the lack of connection between the words and the emotion. I call that incongruency. That's why it feels a little creepy, because she doesn't actually feel that emotion. She thinks she's supposed to say that, but all the action she's taken is to feel safe, because she can't let go of the image she had of him, because that's the only thing I think that held her together.
It feels like she knows the world is looking at her, and in some way, shapes, and forms, the world wants her to feel those things of this pain and this suffering that her husband put these people through, because people want to villainize somebody, and somebody's got to pay for it in people's minds. And I'm not saying she does. If she had nothing to do with it, she's a victim as well. But that's what the world is looking at her as. And I would imagine if you're in that situation too, I mean, it's hard to contemplate that, but if you were, I think I would be riddled with guilt too. If I discovered the person I loved and was not seeing doing this, even if the signs were there, but I was so distracted with whatever that I was unable to see it, I would probably be riddled with guilt too. Do you think, pure conjecture here, do you think she wants to feel it? Do you think she wants to feel, I don't want to say guilt, but feel something, feel the pain, simmer in the pain as a way to heal and experience the trauma of what all this is from a victim standpoint, more than the standpoint of being the wife of the killer. And I'm just wondering if she capably functionally doesn't have that ability. And sometimes when people are not capable of doing things emotionally, even if they want to, they go to extremes, cutting, things of that nature. We see this all the time, especially in young people, where people will do things to self-harm. I'm wondering if that's part of what the room is, if this is literally going to the source of the fire. Can you think of a worse place to set up a fucking bedroom? I can't. I mean, so, and she does. I'm wondering if this is her, okay, I'm going to go to the source of the flame, the hottest part, the blue flame, and I'm going to live in it. And maybe then I will feel what the world is telling me I should be feeling right now so I can go through it.
I don't think so.
But I don't know that she's capable. I don't know. That's
I
one
don't, I don't think it's not, I don't think she's capable. I think she's very empathetic in her way. I don't think she's cognating that's something she needs to do. Remember, she used the word, she's trying to figure out what triggered him. Mm-hmm. And because she doesn't believe that her husband is this man. It's a darkness in him that gets triggered. And so part of, I think, this basement, as you're saying, this is what popped in my mind as well, was this basement is comforting for her, but it's also if she can remodel that bedroom to remove all the triggers that made him into the monster, then he'll no longer be that monster.
Or is she trying to figure, I don't know if she's deep enough for this. I don't read her as that.
I don't think she's thinking about the victims at all.
No, I wonder, is she living down there to try and see what inspired Rex? You know, like if she follows where he was, if she stays in the places he stayed, spends the time in the places he spent time, will she somehow better under, because she says in the doc, I want to better understand this version of Rex, this other side of Rex. And if she starts living the life of Rex, maybe she'll better understand that. Maybe being in that room. I wonder if it gets into some sort of a woo-woo territory here of, is she thinking like there's some sort of energy in that basement or, you know, possession type thing going on of like.
I think if she wanted to understand Rex, she would leave the room as is and live down there with unaltered, because then she'd understand that. The fact that she altered it, I still can come back to that. I think she's trying to save him still. You know, I think she's living in this fantasy world of reciprocity where she always viewed him as saving her. And now she's like, now it's my chance. I can save him and I'm going to save him. I'm going to remove all the triggers that made him that bad person, because he's really not a bad person. He's just a family man. I mean, you've heard her rationalize all these things before. Yeah. Now you're just putting she's given us all the data points. Now you're just kind of understanding how those data points come together with really simple psychology. I want to feel safe. I want to save my knight in shining armor who saved me.
Yeah. I'm
so sad because I really wish she might. I just haven't seen anything from the docs that say, now she's saying she's trying to say the right words, but she is so in self-preservation mode. She's so in saving Rex mode. She's so in her own self-centered mode. She is not focusing on victims, at least my interpretation of what we're seeing.
I saw, this is an interesting comment here. She hates that the women got his attention and reclaimed their special room. I think that's
part of it too.
And I don't know that it's cognitive. I don't know that she's sitting there like literally thinking that out loud, but I think her emotions might be leading her there.
Yeah, I agree. Just think about this. In her mind right now, she finally has him as hers. I mean, he's hers. For the first time, it's only me. I'll tell you what, if he ever started getting fan mail from women in that prison and she found out about it, that'd be an interesting response by her, wouldn't it?
I'm sure he is, naturally. There's always people.
There are wacko dudes out there, man.
Even a murderer like that? I mean...
Oh, yes. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And here's why, Todd, because it boggles the mind that people, I mean, Manson got them all the time. BTK gets them. All these serial killers, I guarantee you. I mean, Coburg has got a fan club, because what happens is that people that are feeling so disenfranchised, they feel so like no one cares about them. They just want to feel special. And if I can get someone like this to make me feel special, he wants me, even though he wants to be a sadistic killer of me, it makes me feel special. That is a broken brain individual looking for attention, because we're looking for that attention. They just found sick ways to do it. And so people were, I guarantee you, he's going to have at least a couple that don't believe he was guilty, believe he's a great guy. I also believe you're a great guy. I can be a great woman for you too.
Here's an interesting social experiment to do with the Huermans. And I'm not saying we should do it, and I'm not encouraging anyone to do it, but I'm saying it would be interesting. Cindy from Kalamazoo, Michigan writes over to both Asa and Rex, he's mine. And she starts talking about her love for Rex. Cindy from Kalamazoo doesn't exist, but letters go to both places. So it's insured that Asa's aware Cindy's writing to Rex, and Rex is aware that there's communication going back and forth, which would then lead to them eventually having some sort of conversation about Cindy and Kalamazoo. And she'd want to find out what Rex's feelings are for Cindy and Kalamazoo, because Cindy and Kalamazoo seems to really think Rex is dandy. That would be interesting. And I think it's probably morally wrong to do something like that. I mean, not to Rex, but to her, because I do believe she's a victim in all of this. But
she'd be very susceptible to it. I think she'd get very defensive of her position as his wife. She'd be very defensive of it.
It would be, but I think it would be somewhat cruel, but I almost think it'd be something that maybe should be done. I mean, honestly, for her own good, where it's like, maybe this will help you see him a little differently. It'd be painful. It would go against her own narrative of what she believes, but she needs that if she's going to live a healthy life in any way, shape, or form. But I think maybe we've already, sailed away from that dock a long time ago.
I mean, I could see this playing out where he, at this point, so remember, we talked about this with Siobhan. She is his really only real lifeline to the outside world, where she is going to be taking care of him, in mm-hmm. as much as she can through his commissary, through correspondence. She became a gatekeeper of his, where, because he knows she only sees him as this great guy. And so I would imagine a world where he would not entertain, because what would he get out of it? Correspondence coming in from some other woman. So he'd probably let her know, because if he let her know, it maintains his control over her, because she'll trust him. And then it puts her in the driver's seat of any correspondence with anyone trying to do that to begin with. I think it'd be very cruel, because I think she would be responsive to it, because mm-hmm. You can imagine her saying things like, you could never be woman enough like me to take care of my husband like I do. I mean, something yeah. around those lines, because now she has complete, she's got him for the first time in her life. She's got him with undivided attention. And I don't think that because he's using her as a very effective screwdriver right now on the outside, unless someone could come in with another better offer that could give him, because again, anything that comes in and out is public knowledge. And so mm-hmm. she could ultimately find out about it, which would undermine him and his control of information. I don't see him responding to anyone except her.
At the end of the day here, maybe if the only thing that's left here, and if she's not going to choose to better her life and to, it's nobody else's job but hers to do that for herself.
It's her path.
It's her path. And if the public interest, the human interest outside of this is to find out if there's more victims that he's responsible of, maybe keeping her and maybe allowing her to live in this delusional land is the best thing to get those answers.
Yeah. I think if there's ever going to be leakage, potential leakage, it will happen with someone in the BAU interviewing him, who's going to be able to piece together an evolving methodology for different locations, potentially for, outside of New York. And then any leakage that if she would be responsive to talking to the BAU as well during his interview process, so they could actually, I wouldn't say play them against each other, but direct her to have conversations after the conversation the BAU had with him, there'd be easy follow-up through her mm-hmm. that they could actually maybe get a little bit more leakage. Like if they talked about, the methodology evolving with him and then scripted her about, hey, when I was down in so-and-so, did you ever do anything down there? In other words, try to link the two together mm-hmm. To see what kind of data points that he wouldn't want to tell the BAU when being interviewed by them, but might be more... a little more acquiescing, because if she then tied her ability to help him by having good conversations with him, because it makes her feel good and that's his only access to the outside, but in order to do it, he's got to be a little more revealing about, like her saying, I would just want to get to know that other side and how it got triggered. How did it get triggered in South Carolina when I was there? How you could play the two together. That's what I'd be doing.
Use her as a key, as a tool, if you will. A very, like one of those odd tools you find at like Harbor Freight and you're like, what the hell is this? What would you use this for? It's like one strange use. She's that. Or a key. And she's the only one that's going to be able to unlock Rex the way that he needs to be unlocked. And so it's in the best interest of her not cutting all ties in communication with him if they're in the best interest of getting to that data, that you information.
Know, boy, we're going down such a rabbit hole in this one. But, you know, if she did this and the BAU worked with, and they got permission to do it, and it's ethical, to work with her psychologist, this actually would be a path to her finally seeing him for who he is. Because if she is the one that they're asking her, and she's willing to give help, to help uncover potential other lives, because it seems like she wants to do the right thing. She's just incapable of knowing what that is outside of herself. This actually could help her see that, because she's actually part of the process of strategically interviewing him for him to disclose more than he already admitted to. That could, because she's in part of that process and she's not a bystander of it, I'd be very interesting to see what her therapist would think about that.
Yeah, I would too.
Good question for Siobhan next week.
Yes, it very much is. We'll have to discuss that. We're going to be talking about Maternal Instinct on Wednesday.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God, the horrible one. Oh, my God.
I started rewatching that this morning and taking notes. I'm like, I have my notes, but I'm like, I'm going to watch this again. And I have so many more. It'll be a fascinating conversation. Anyway, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.